Episode 104. Tough old broads. I'm Roland. Not a tough old broad. Cranky old man.
I'm Dale. I'm also a cranky old man.
Yesterday at the Vancouver International Film Festival Theater on Seymour Street, I went to see Tough Old Broads.
Facility.
Yes. In a small theater. It was sold out, but you probably could have got tickets because there's at least three tickets on standby. There were at least three unoccupied seats. But, you know, that's kind of unreliable. So it talks about three women. Catherine Switzer, the first woman to run the Harvard Marathon. Boston Marathon. Officially in 1967.
She was not a tough old broad when she did that.
No, she was young.
Arguably a tough one, tough young one.
She was wearing bib number 261.
Why do you remember that?
I remember that because that's the name of her nonprofit now.
Oh, okay.
Which they talked about in the documentary. And there's a famous photo of the race director. She had registered under a gender neutral name or something to that effect. So he found out there's a woman in the race. He came by with the race van or truck and tried to rip her bib off. He reached for her bib, and her boyfriend at the time, she never said in the documentary what happened to him, but whether they got married or whatnot. And her boyfriend at the time, it looked like a body check, but just basically shoved him aside.
Intervened, mildly.
Yeah, not really hockey style. And she quote unquote escaped and finished the marathon. Wow. I didn't know that. Did you know that?
I had heard her story actually. Yeah. That of the three women you mentioned, I didn't know her by name, but I had heard her story, which is kind of amazing. It's just really hard to think of that time. What year was that again?
67.
67. Yeah. So I was like
67.
I was like six years old, but it's
3 years old.
Hard to remember those times where there was that much exclusion by gender.
Well, I remember them because Billie Jean King. That's from
that's
firmly etched in my consciousness.
I remember the Billie Jean King, John McEnroe, match being big.
And the Equal Rights Amendment. But those two things are the things that I will never forget. The other two women were Silhouat Cloutier, first woman to initiate a legal action against the U.S. government for its role in climate change. She is a Inuit person from Nunavut, Canada, who was speaking her language and then was forced by the government of Canada to relocate to a southern high school or something. So as a result, she never learned the ways of the land. The people of her generation and the previous generation were the last ones to learn the ways, the traditional ways, in an organic, normal fashion. And she didn't learn. She didn't learn how to prepare seal skins for clothing, for canoes, for tents, whatever. They use it for everything, right? And we talked about this in the movie. Amazing woman, and she is relearning that stuff, or learning it for the first time, with the new next generation. And she also has, I believe she has a nonprofit too, trying to lobby for, you know, amelioration dealing with realistically climate change. And she has a book. I believe she's won awards for the book and also for her work, her activism.
Many sad stories from up there on how things are being impacted by climate change.
Right. She says, you have to have hope because it's not, non-hope leads to non-action. And we need to take action. So it was quite inspiring. And then the third woman was Sharon Farmer, the first woman and first person of color to be the chief official White House photographer, not ghost, chief official White House photographer in the Clinton era. And in the movie, she's wearing, I don't know how many cameras. There's a picture of her in the Clinton days with probably the same cameras. She's a Canon shooter. I see in the picture from the website, tougholdbroads.com, I see 1, 2, 3, 4 cameras at least with
humongous
super large
lenses, yeah.
Which is normal. It's just normal for a White House or a government photographer. I believe in 2026. The Clinton era was what? 80s? 90s?
I want to say more the 90s than the 80s, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's 90s.
You and, gotta fit Reagan in there somewhere.
Yeah. Well, there's Reagan twice and then Bush. So, and then Clinton, right? So,
yeah. Yeah, that's right.
90s. And, but it's 2026, and I don't think you'd have to carry as large cameras, but I could be wrong. I'm not a professional photographer. Yeah, she was amazing. She's talking about, she was the one, you know, like it's America oscillates between, the United States of America oscillates between the KKK and HLPE is one of her great lines from the movie. And you gotta believe in hope. And in the documentary, they show her taking pictures of people voting in the 2024 election. And the demoralization, she's taking pictures after, and the demonstrations after, and before. She's quite an inspiring person. And she just looks...
What was she doing before she got the White House gig?
She was always a photographer.
Was always?
A photographer. I think she was freelance. Somebody noticed her. And...
Well, I mean, she had to have been pretty good if she got the White House gig.
Yeah, she was a freelance stringer, a photographer, or whatever you call people like that. I guess, something like that. She was definitely out there doing stuff, but this just, somebody noticed her and decided to mention it to the White House, and the White House said yes. And there's a lot of images in the documentary showing her amazing photographs. There's a lot of amazing images in that whole documentary. Like there's the iconic picture of Catherine Switzer being jostled aside.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's
that picture.
Images of her. She now has a nonprofit, which she started very recently with a German woman, which has global chapters, and it's called 261, and because that was her bib number in the Boston Marathon in 1967. And there's images of them working with Afghanistan women in refugees in Germany, and showing them how to run. Doing warm-up exercises. Uh-huh. She says it's not about the time. It's not about the race. It's about showing up.
Yeah.
That's sort of thing that all three of them said.
Yeah.
You know, it's a ongoing process. Showing up is three quarters of the battle. Yeah. And if you don't show up, if you don't demonstrate, if you don't show up, if you don't run, it's more difficult. But Catherine Switzer said that, well, she could see why people wouldn't want to run because there was no support. There was no other women. In Afghanistan, no one runs. In many other countries, not just Afghanistan.
You know, I was in the early 80s, I worked with someone who was a marathoner. And I got the impression that even then, it wasn't something that had hit like the general culture like it has now.
I think that's true.
I can't imagine what it was like in the late
67,
60s.
Yeah.
I would have almost been a fringe, right? Because I remember the jogging craze, like it was jogging back then.
Yeah.
And it was just like,
yeah.
Why are these people out running on purpose?
26 miles a marathon distance is quite a distance.
That's crazy, yeah.
Was it 26.4 or 24.6? I can never get the exact, but it's over 20 miles, which is just a lot of running.
Yeah, I think it's 26. Yeah, the majority of people I know that do marathons, it's like a bucket list thing just to like do it.
It's really hard to do more than one. It's really hard on the body.
Actually, that's not quite what I've heard. Like, to do it fast, if you do it like slow and easy,
that's the problem. Is you can eke it out. But if you want to do it a sustainable way, that's the hard part.
That's a yes.
You can eke out one, but if you're going to do two a year or three a year,
so now
then it becomes difficult.
Now the people that get looked at a little bit strangely are the ultramarathoners. Oh, yeah, we know about marathons. They're pretty normal.
The ultramarathoners are weirdos. Like
I would love to know more about the photographer and her cameras. Like, people and their relationship to cameras fascinate me.
She had a Canon 5D Mark IV. Its features quite prominently, which is an excellent camera. I have a 5D Mark I.
I love hearing articulate people talk about photography and why they use different equipment. It's just... Same with movie cinematography, like the cinematographers.
How they pick their lenses. How they pick their shots.
Why they picked a particular lens and what they were going for, and like that, just that really solid understanding of light and depth of field.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. And my brain doesn't work that way, sadly.
Well, I think your brain could work that way.
Did she go
If you take enough shots with the same gear, and she didn't go into her gear. There was no gear moments.
Okay,
either that or I was napping.
We need a new documentary, Roland.
But I don't know. I feel like most.
Sorry, what was her name again?
Sharon Farmer.
Sharon Farmer and her toys.
You know, I bet you she'd love to do that. I bet you there's somewhere on the internet something like that.
What photographer doesn't love talking about their gear?
Oh, I'm sure lots of them don't like talking about gear, especially really? The non-male ones. Oh, yeah. Males always talk about gear.
Oh, okay. Well, fair enough. Fair enough.
In fact, most of the women photographers I've met don't care about their gear. They just like taking pictures and developing them and printing them. Yeah, no, seriously, they don't.
Oh, but I'm sure if you talked about, I mean, maybe they talk about it differently if you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, but they're not going to get into the in-depth specs.
The effect, yeah, not of the gear, but of like, if you want to talk about why did you pick this depth of field?
Yeah, I don't think they go through a conscious process. I think men might go through a more conscious checklist process. But I think I don't.
No, I want to.
And I know a lot
out.
Of women photographers don't. Like, they don't say, oh, I'm picking this lens because it has a depth of field. Or I'm picking this aperture because it has a depth of field. They just intuitively, after taking hundreds of thousands or whatever number of photos,
but surely,
know what to do.
Surely, if you ask them what they were going for in the shot, they're
going to. Yeah, they'll say what they were going for. But the men will say, well, I wanted this so much depth of field. Women will say, I wanted to focus on this person. That's the difference. Right?
I'm good with either.
Yeah, I'm good with either, but I'm just saying, like,
so
I've been in photo groups and the one or two women present, they just laugh at the men for asking these questions.
Oh, interesting.
They do. And okay. I can sort of believe them because most artists don't want to talk about their paints.
Oh, okay. Some artists do.
Most painters I know don't talk about their process, about how they pick the colors, how they pick the paints, how they pick the canvases. They don't talk about that.
I heard
I'm sure there are many who do, but they're a minority, I bet.
A woman, comic graphics artist talking about why she was working with particular mediums and what she was doing with
sure,
it.
But
it was fascinating.
I think the majority of artists won't talk about their process that way.
Well, interesting.
Like,
I want to hear more.
I'm sure there's a significant minority who do, but I don't think there's a majority who do.
So the movie is Tough Old Broads.
An hour and a half.
Hour
I think it's
half.
Still playing at the VIF. Tougholdbroads.com, I believe.
So it'll probably show up on a streamer somewhere.
Or has already.
Probably has already somewhere.
Tubi or whatever the VPL has, the Vancouver Public Library.
Or maybe they'll do just pay for view off their website. Some people do that too.
Yeah. Yep. All right. I think that's episode 104 in the can.
Just
I'm rolling from
it's starting to ring.
Commercial Street Cafe where they're about to kick us out quite rightly. Ciao,
I'm Dale. Bye-bye.